Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. And have a very special guest in studio where we're going to be talking about all sorts of things interesting. Noah Shafatinsky, he's education and outreach manager at Stand With Us. And he is visiting South Africa for Stand With Us, for the organization, primarily to assist at Israel Apartheid Week. Well, we like to call it Israel Awareness Week, but that is something completely different. Noah, welcome to South Africa. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
So is this your first trip to South Africa?
So this is actually my second time. I was here about 2 years ago for the same sort of situation.
Right. Okay. So you become very familiar. What's your first impression of, so you're attending Israel Apartheid or Israel Awareness Week at Wits University?
Yes.
And how's it been?
So it was yesterday was the first day, and it was actually really empowering to see how many of the Jewish students and non-Jewish allies were at the table ready to engage in open dialogue. Mm-hmm. And there were actually a lot of students who came up asking questions that would be deemed tough questions. But at the end of the day, they were also very open-minded to hear a different side of the story than they'd been exposed to. So it was really a pleasure to be engaged in something like that and be able to support students who were so empowered through my role at Stand With Us.
Does it differ? Is South Africa the same, the campus the same, different to other parts of the world that you've observed?
So I actually just got back from a tour in the U.S. on different campuses, and I think every single place you go, even within the United States, depending what campus, they're going to be different, depending on the climate, depending on what are the issues that students care about. And I think that what's really unique and special about South Africa that I've noticed from my experience on this campus and as in campuses in the past is the way that students, even if they have been fed misinformation or disinformation, are open to hearing another side.
That's very interesting. So South Africans, despite the government, in fact, I wonder if the government, I'm just thinking out loud, I wonder if because the government has so little credibility, the fact that they've embraced the Palestinian cause at the expense of Israel, I wonder if it's actually in a way done the cause a disservice. It's interesting.
That's actually really interesting to think about. I haven't thought about it from that perspective. I think that that could be true. Another aspect of it also is just that so many people are getting their information around the world, not even necessarily from government sources, but from social media. Mm. So when you raise your voice on social media and in real life, people also give that a lot of credibility.
Do you think people listen to you differently because you're black?
So I think that part of my own personal story, and in general, people bringing their personal stories adds power to our narrative, right, and our story and the facts. So every engagement that I have with someone, I bring up my own personal background and also the fact that I'm living on the ground in Israel. So know all kinds of misconceptions about Israel.
And it just doesn't make sense, you know, how you defending an apartheid state, you know, it doesn't make sense. It's jarring in a way. So you almost compelled to listen because otherwise the story doesn't come together.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, mm-hmm. people came and they asked things that are based on deep disinformation.
But like what?
I mean, people would come up and say, how do you defend this Israeli policy or that Israeli policy? Some people came up immediately trying to portray Jews as Europeans, and it was very easy to shut that down. And we actually didn't get a lot of pushback about that, explaining the Jewish people's roots and connection to Israel.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that about the region. I didn't know this history. So bringing the actual history and also my experience being there, being an Israeli, living amongst Israelis who come home from all around the world, it brings this personal element into it that is much harder for people to disagree with unless they're going to openly disrespect my lived experience.
So what is your lived experience? Give us a sense of your background. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up for most of my life in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. I moved around a lot because my dad was in the U.S. Navy. Okay. My dad is actually from the former Soviet Union. So he was born in Moscow and he came to the U.S. as a refugee. So from that side of the family, I have this deep-rooted Soviet Jewish experience where Israel was a central component of one of the only ways that they were actually able to preserve their Jewish connection was knowing they're from their roots. And on my mom's side of the family, we're black Americans. So my mom is actually born in Southern California, but her family roots actually date back to, you know, the Jim Crow South in Mississippi.
Wow. Okay. And did she become Jewish?
Yeah, so my mom has Jewish roots as well as my dad. So I was born and raised Jewish.
Oh, okay. So you raised Jewish and you move around the United States. How actively involved were you in terms of both religion and Israel?
So Israel was always a core aspect of our Jewish identity in my household.
Well, especially because you mentioned about your father.
Yeah, and like this idea that, okay, even when all of the religious aspects of Judaism were stripped or made illegal in the Soviet Union, the thing that it's a common Soviet Jewish story, the thing that kept them connected to their roots is knowing we're from Israel. The Soviet government for sure reminded them of that. So that was always a core aspect. Religiously, you know, it kind of varied depending where we were living, because since we moved around so much, there were some times where I was actively involved in Jewish communities. I'd go to synagogue. Often I'd be in Jewish day school, and there were other times where I was the only Jewish kid in my school. I mean, I grew up in military communities. I was on a Marine Corps base in middle school.
There couldn't have been many, many other Jewish kids growing up.
No, there weren't a lot of times. Right. So I kind of got used to, okay, when people ask questions about Judaism or about Israel, sometimes maybe it doesn't feel like the fair burden or responsibility, but I have the opportunity to share our people's story.
Yeah.
And it might be the only voice that person hears.
In other words, your whole life you've been training as a representative of the Jewish nation.
Essentially, yeah. It's paying off now.
It's quite that's quite the responsibility on your shoulders. All right. And then what happens?
So then growing up, as Israel is more and more important in my life, I'm also a musician. So I rap and I make beats, and my music starts to reflect more of my relationship with Israel. I visit Israel for the first time when I'm 18. I go back more and more, and I start to envision my life there in the future. So when I was 22, I made Aliyah, like 2.5 years ago. And I immediately started working for Stand With Us in Israel because they were such a good resource for me as a student when I was on college campus and when we dealt with the Israel apartheid week that people put out at George Washington University, and when we dealt with BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. But even beyond that, they helped us be proactive about bringing the Jewish story and the Israeli story to campus before any other side can try and corrupt our narrative.
So you make Aliyah, you start working, and then, of course, you start traveling around the world to different campuses. It's an incredible privilege in a way, but it's also got to be quite stressful in that every day that you step onto campus, you don't know what confrontation you're going to deal with. How difficult is that?
So that's, I think, one of the difficulties that I've thought about and that you hear from every single group I talk to is like, we have to learn the facts. What if someone says this? What if someone says that? How do I respond? And the thing that brings me a little bit of solace or a little bit of calm going into those situations is just the confidence that I'm standing on justice. I'm standing on facts and history, and I know that facts and history. I think that education, I majored in Judaic studies in university.
I was going to ask, how solid is your knowledge?
So it's very solid. Like I majored in Judaic studies. I have a minor in history from the George Washington University. And even in my independent time, I do a lot of research because if we don't know our story, someone else is going to tell it for us. Mm. So yesterday what I saw from the Jewish students who were on campus and the non-Jewish students who are being allies, they all knew our story, and they were ready to answer every single tough question that came towards us, whether it was about current politics or Jewish history or Jewish connection to the land. And every single one of them, because they had that knowledge and they dedicated the time to learning it, they weren't worried. They weren't worried when people came up to them and asked them a question. They were ready to have open dialogue, and I think that confidence went a really long way because the people who came up to challenge us didn't expect to be interacting with people who actually had answers. And when they heard that we had answers, they said, oh, these people have confidence. And even if I don't necessarily know everything, or I don't necessarily agree with everything they're saying, I see that there's another side that I haven't been exposed to, and I need to learn more.
One of the biggest challenges, certainly, that we've observed is that the so-called liberal left is very, very quick to shut down alternate opinions. So in my personal stories, for example, is I was deplatformed from South Africa's largest online publication because of my support for Israel, in effect. They don't want to hear. We see it at the universities, in colleges in the United States, where it's shouting it down. It's deafening it's making sure another voice is not heard. How do you deal with the frustration around not being able to have the dialogue that is so critical in understanding the situation?
So with that, it's creating the space for that dialogue and calling out the people who try and stop it and calling out their hypocrisy. So Stand With Us, we're a nonpartisan organization, so we'll engage with people from the right wing, left wing, across the board, around the world. So in those situations where you have someone who says that they are standing for democratic values, for open exchange of ideas, and they're openly trying to shut us down, one of the first things that we do is explain, hey, I'm here for dialogue. I hear what you're saying, or I've heard the narrative that you've said before. I have something that I can add to the conversation that you might be missing. And more often than not, I've found that people who are actually participants, not necessarily institutions, but participants in conversations that are there to learn, will take a step back and listen. And those who don't want to listen will try and argue. And at that point, that's when you can
Then you're engaged.
Yeah.
Then you're engaged. Argument is fine.
Right.
That's not something to be, I mean, that's something to be encouraged, not to be afraid of, as long as we, a few comments here. Noah for Israeli Prime Minister. Okay. There we go. You've got the support of high listeners to continue your journey into politics. And then this is actually a great question. Ronnie's asking, how do you deal with anti-Israel Jews?
So I think this is something that's really important to address. In general, when we talk about anti-Israel Jews today, people are speaking about the ones who are on college campuses who identify as anti-Zionist. Mm. Now, just because someone is against an aspect of Jewish identity does not divorce that aspect of Jewish identity from Jewish identity.
Okay, well, you say that again slower for me.
So just
because I'm trying to process that. Say it again.
So just because someone, and I'll give an example, if someone is against or doesn't feel connected with an aspect of Jewish identity,
okay. It
doesn't divorce that aspect of Jewish identity from our people's story. So for example, there are plenty of people who can be against Israel or against Israeli policies, which is okay, because that's legitimate criticism. And the people who are against Israeli policies and critical of Israeli policies the most are Israelis.
Of course.
Which is why we have elections all the time.
Of course.
But if someone is crossing the line into trying to deny the Jewish connection to the land of Israel, first of all, they're not standing on facts. There's no way that you can divorce whether it's language, whether it's food, whether it's religious traditions, whether it's prayers, from the land of Israel. Simple history. Mm. And if someone doesn't want to feel that connection or doesn't feel that connection themselves, that's fine. Cool. That's their prerogative. Yeah. It sucks for them because they're missing out on a core element of our culture. And at the same time, we need to be able to stand up and say that's a marginal group of people who doesn't feel a connection to who we are as a people. And that type of thought doesn't have a place in representing who we are as a people. So, for example, there are plenty of Jews who do not keep Shabbat or do not keep kosher. Mm. None of those Jews will make the argument that Shabbat and kashrut are not important aspects of Jewish identity.
Mm. And you've got to divorce Judaism from Shabbat and kashrut.
Right. You don't have to practice it. You don't have to feel connected from it. But
yes. So that is interesting because sometimes those are the voices that are amplified the most because they, again, it fits into a narrative, and a lot of media wants to suggest that there are many Jews, many, many Jews who aren't Zionists, which of course is a false narrative. But as a result of it, their voices are amplified quite strongly.
So I think it's also important when people do that to call them out for engaging in tokenism and tokenization. Now, you have groups of people around the world, and you have people from every one of those groups who potentially stands against the best interest of that group of people. And it happens in the United States. In the U.S., as black Americans, we have a connection to Africa, right? We have a connection. That's where we have roots. There are black Americans who want to divorce themselves from that connection and from our culture. They can feel entitled to do that, but anyone in the United States of America who platforms them would be called out for tokenizing a marginal voice who doesn't represent the entirety of a community.
Oh, that's very interesting. So, there's a very, very, it's almost quite hypocritical, because if that is the approach to African Americans, then it needs to be the same approach here.
Right. You get into a double standard situation.
Yes.
Picking and choosing which Jew they want to platform.
Right. And that is exactly what happens. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope are the students who are on campus, honestly. It was amazing for me to see, especially it's been a wild ride since October 7th, traveling around different campuses in the world. But seeing the dedication that these students had, like the facts that they had ready to go, shows that they did their research. They understood that we're in this dire situation and it's on me, it's my responsibility to deepen my connection and my knowledge on Israel, to be able to dive into my connection to our homeland deeper than just an invention, which is great, or deeper than just something that's relevant in pop culture, but to really understand our story and our connection, and also to have the confidence. And I'd kind of also wrap that up in one engagement that I had, where there was one student who said, listen, I came at this not knowing anything what a Zionist was. From my perspective, a Zionist is somebody who supports all these horrible things against Palestinians, and it was great to hear your personal perspective, and it changed my mind. And she walked away actually saying, I didn't know what a Zionist was. I was against it, but what really inspired me was your courage to stand here on a campus with a sign saying that you're a Zionist. And seeing that courage and that confidence and how that actually influences conversations and brings people in, that's what gives me hope.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, I think you are doing an incredible job. You're assisting our students who are on the front lines, and they really are on the front lines, especially here in South Africa in many ways, although it is encouraging to hear that there is a fair amount of dialogue. And I just want to express gratitude to you for coming all the way to South Africa to assist in this fight and wish you success along the journey. Noah Shifatinsky, he's an education and outreach manager at Stand With Us.